Genesis 10 and 11. We see in the first part of chapter 10, in fact, all of chapter 10, the generations of Noah. And then chapter 11 is not, I think it's important to see that in chapter 11, we have not, it kind of, chapter 10 and 11 are together, if that makes sense. And why do we see that? Well, because we know what happens in chapter 11. We'll talk about it. But in chapter 10 and verse 5, it talks about after his tongue. So every one after his tongue. So what is tongue? It's language. And at this point, they're all from one family. And so everybody being from that one family of Noah, they all speak the same language at this point, chapter 10. So we're seeing all this divided, or I shouldn't say chapter 10, but prior to chapter 11. And so chapter 10 is giving us information ahead of what we're going to find out in chapter 11. And Genesis is that way. Go back to the creation, you'll see the same thing. There are things explained in one chapter that doesn't happen until the next chapter. But just keep that in mind as you study. Sometimes you've got to take the whole picture and not just believe that every chapter is chronological. Okay, does that make sense to everybody? Verse 25, you'll notice, unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days was the earth divided. Now, what are we talking about? Are we talking about a division of the continents? Well, this is where the continents spread out. Maybe, or it may be in reference to Babel when the people were divided. But we know that it happened, right? We know the continents divided. You could put them all back together like a piece of puzzle. But we do notice that's his name, and that reference is brought there. And I always have believed that that's talking about the separation of the continents. Verse 1, chapter 11, the whole earth was one language. Okay? So we see that chapter 10 does not precede chapter 11. In one speech, it came to pass as they journeyed from the east. So what happened? Well, we've got the family of Noah. They've landed. And as that ark landed, the family comes out from there. We've had confrontation. We've had some family problems. And Ham has been kind of pushed aside. He's not going to have the blessing that the other brothers have. And they've started having children. They've started having families. And the population has grown. And we get to chapter 11, and it says they still had all one language, and they're starting to migrate. Why? The same reason, of course, still going ahead. Abraham and Lot divided. Why? Because Abraham had a great enterprise, and Lot had a great enterprise. And it was getting to the point where they were fighting over water and fighting over fields. You know, if you have cattle, you have stock. Sometimes that's going to happen, and that's what was happening with Abraham and Lot. Well, that's what was happening with Noah's sons, too, and grandsons and all the family, is they were growing, and they didn't want to live on top of each other. They wanted to have space, and they wanted to have room. And so we see that happening here already. And so they're starting to migrate. They're starting to move. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick, burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the whole earth, the whole face of the face of the whole earth. So was there a problem in building? Was God against building? Was there a problem with building a tower? Are skyscrapers unbiblical? No, they're not. The problem was not the building. The problem was not the tower or the idea that it would reach to heaven. Guys, you cannot build a stairway to heaven. You build it into the sky. Eventually, you get so high you can't breathe, right? And so even in their mindset, if they thought they were going to reach heaven, God would not have stopped that because it's an impossibility. Understand, heaven is not the same physical realm that we have. So when you say, where is heaven? Well, we talk about going up to heaven. Is heaven north or is heaven, you know? Heaven is another dimension. Heaven is spiritual. And so even in that spiritual understanding, even with all the physical and, tangible, the tangibility of heaven, even though we know it's real and we know there's gates and there's streets and we know there's at least a mansion, right? A mansion. And so we see all these things and we see the glory of God, but it's not the same realm. So it's not like you can go there in a physical sense. So building a tower to heaven is not the problem. What's the problem? The problem is that they are building something for their own glory. They had become a very humanistic mindset. Guys, when we are talking about our lives, we got saved and we buried the old me and the old you in the waters of baptism. We buried the old one. And when we rose up to walk in newness of life, to walk in Christ, not to ourselves, but to His glory. So their humanistic, selfish, egotistical, and the new word we use, narcissistic mentality that they had is what God was opposed to. They had become non-spiritual, and that's a problem. What happened? The earth had populated, God destroyed everything and saved 8 people. And now here we go again. And He's made a promise He wouldn't flood the whole earth and destroy the whole earth anymore. So what's He going to do? Look at what He says. We'll just keep reading verse 5. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. Who is that? Jesus, the physical manifestation of God, the human fleshly appearance of God. We'll see Him throughout the Bible. We've already seen Him in the garden with Adam and Eve. We've seen Him have conversation with Cain. So He's still making physical appearances. He makes a physical appearance here. Why? Could He not see it from heaven? Sure, He could see it from heaven. But He comes down to be in the midst of them. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children builded. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one. They have all one language. This they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Now, I understand that what God is saying here is in a negative sense. But think about what He says there. And this is the Lord. And think about what that means. Think about what that means in our lives, of our limits. Who limits us the most? We do. And maybe you've read the reference or the illustration of the elephant. When an elephant is small, they chain him to something that he can't move. It's too big. He can't move it. And he tries to pull that chain away, but he can't. And eventually what happens, he learns that as long as that chain is on his leg, he can't go anywhere. And so they could take that same chain and hook it up to a Rubbermaid lawn chair, but that chain is on his leg and he thinks he can't go anywhere. Because in his mind, he can't. Now, as an elephant, we've seen elephants that get beyond that, right? And they rip whatever they're connected to away and they can go because they finally lost their willingness to be chained down. But we can speak one language. How many of us in here speak English? I don't mean good English. I mean English. Right? Second language. Swamp talk. Right? That's what my aunt always told me. She said, you have that swamp talk. That English that we speak, we all have one language. Guys, when we put our hearts and minds into something, we can do great things. Are we willing to do great things? Are we willing to do all that we can do? Or have we limited ourselves? Have we surrendered to the chains of the imagination of what we've experienced in the past? Well, I tried that once. It didn't work. How many times have you ever had a great idea and you made a recommendation and somebody said, well, we tried that before. It doesn't work. And sometimes that's true. But sometimes it didn't work then, but it will work now. And so we shouldn't limit ourselves by our earlier experiences. They could do it. They're building a tower. But they're building a tower to themselves. They're building a tower to identify themselves so that they'll be able to look back and remember who they are. Look, lest we be scattered across the whole earth. Let's give ourselves a reason to be here and nowhere else. But see, that wasn't God's plan. God's plan was to populate the whole earth. God's plan was for them to separate and go their different ways. He's got three sons there that he wants to go out and populate the whole earth. But they have this sense of wanting to stay together, and so they're going to build a high-rise condominium. Yeah, well, they can all live in the same building. And they can all stay together. Or at least be able to look toward it and remember that they're all part of this one family, which doesn't sound bad, but it wasn't God's plan. Guys, there's a lot of things that we do that aren't bad, but they're not part of God's plan. And that means that God is not for it. He's opposed to it. Because God's plan will be the best in our lives. It'll be best for you. It'll be best for me if we'll do what God wants us to do. But we get something in our mind and we say, well, it's a good thing because it'll keep the family all close together. And I understand that. I like having my family close. If it were up to me, they'd all live closer. I know there's not enough room for three grown boys along with everything else we have going on, but I don't mind them all being there. I love my family. But that wasn't God's will here. He wanted them separated. And so he said nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. The greatest nation in the world is imagination. It's the greatest one. Because that's where all these ideas, all these great ideas come from. What had happened in earlier imaginations? Remember, the imagination of the thoughts of their heart were only evil continually. So they had a humanistic strain. They had a selfish, narcissistic, egotistical strain. And God had removed all of that, started over with eight people, and here we go again. God said, we're going to split them up. So what did he do? He went after communications. What causes the most fights in your life? Communication. We can send a text or an email or any kind of message or even send a letter, and it's not based on the intonation of the one who wrote it, but of the one who reads it, right? And so if I read that with the wrong attitude or with the last attitude I remember you having, right, I may read it of a different attitude than what you intended it. And so face-to-face communication is the best. Always the best, face to face. And that's why it's so important for us, even though we use all of the technology that's available to us now, and we communicate that way, sometimes it doesn't come across the way it was intended. And sometimes it does, exactly the way it was intended, whether that's good or bad. So we just have to understand that what God did is he went into their communication, verse 7, let us go down there, confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. And here they are all working together. Everybody's in harmony. Everybody's in sync. They've got the people over here making the bricks. They got the people bringing the bricks. They got the people putting the bricks up and doing the mortar in there. Man, they're just making it work. They are moving along. He says they're running like a well-oiled machine. There's nothing that can stop them. They're working together. They got it figured out. How many of you ever worked with somebody so long that you knew what they thought even before they thought it? Or, I mean, even in marriage, right? Same thing. We look at our spouse and say, what are you thinking? Well, most of the time you already know what they're thinking. But we ask that question. We have that, you know, idea to ask so we could communicate. Well, when we work together in harmony, in sync so long, we already understand. We already know. There's that unspoken communication. Sometimes it's a look. You ever give somebody a look and they know what it means? Oh, yeah. We do that with our children, don't we? I don't have to raise my voice. I'm not saying I never do. But I don't have to raise my voice. If I can get them to look at me without saying anything, they know. And that's not just with children. I mean, that's an unspoken communication, our body language. But here they are working together, all speaking the same language, and then all of a sudden somebody said something that didn't sit well. They didn't understand it. and it confounded the language. Look at how many languages there are. And so this language, this communication barrier began to break down. And when they couldn't work with each other, when they couldn't communicate, they couldn't function. That's the problem. It's a problem in churches when we can't communicate. It's a problem. We know we talk about praying for our country. You know what the biggest problem in our country is right now? Communication. And I'm not just talking about the big tech companies trying to squash the information. I mean communication. Communication. Being able to talk. People say, well, don't talk about religion and politics. We ought to be able to talk about religion and politics. Everywhere we go, anybody we need to talk to. I had a good civil conversation with somebody the other day. And I listened and I asked questions and answered questions. And it was a good civil conversation. But I know people I couldn't do that with. Because people are so emotional right now. And look, we're emotional on both sides, aren't we? All you had to do is watch the debate the other side, both sides. You know, they're both emotional. They both got their case to argue. They both have their ideas and their plans and their history. And that's what they were trying to communicate. And let's face it, we're not always good at communicating the facts. We're not always good at communicating the right message. And that's a breakdown in communication. And what happens when we can't communicate? Can't work together, can we? And that's what happened. They couldn't work together. Not only could they not work together, they couldn't live together. That's number one cause of divorce, they say, is money. And why is that? I can tell you why. It's because of lack of communication. So the truth is communication is the number one cause of divorce. But not just a divorce, but in problems working together and problems in churches. And in any organization, whenever there's two people that can't communicate, they can't stay together. They can't work together. There's a problem. So we need to find a way to communicate more effectively in everything we do. I need to take responsibility. You need to take responsibility to communicate effectively. I watched an interview this week, and I'll tell you something. If the interviewer had approached the same questions with a different attitude, it would have been a completely different interview. But by presenting at the beginning a confrontational attitude, the whole interview was confrontational. It didn't have to be that way. Because you can present the same questions, ask the same hard questions in the right way, and have a good conversation. But that's not what happens a lot of times. Why? Emotions. So we got to get our emotions in check, our communication in check, our tone in check, our body language in check. It's all important. So he confounded their language. Verse 8, so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, which was his purpose, that was his plan. He wanted them to spread out. He wanted them to populate. And they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. Now, here's what's interesting. There he confounded the language to separate them, and they separated. Now, what's remarkable is the timing of the coming of Christ was based on what? Was based on the availability of a universal language. So we had in the time of Christ, after all this time, you know, thousands of years, we had the road system and we had the language, the Greek. They were still speaking Aramaic. Of course they were. But because of the empire, the Roman Empire, we had Greek language was usually a secondary language. Today, English is considered a universal language. And you go anywhere and guess what? Most everywhere they speak English. There's some way to communicate. Of course, now we have technology that can overcome the lack of communication, but when Jesus came back, the reason of the timing of Christ's birth, I say came back, but you understand what I mean, when he came to earth as Christ, it was because of the universal language. The education was, he was able to communicate his message in Israel, and that message went from Israel after his resurrection and ascension, and it spread across the whole earth because of language. So here there's a breakdown to get the people to separate. And then with the gospel, there's a unification of the language to bring people back to Christ. It's interesting. Communication is the key. Communication. And we've got to be effective in our communication. If you look at where these sons went, I say the sons, but their sons and such as that. Japheth went north. He went the farthest north. And then you had Shem. Okay, Shem would be part of Shem's family, would be Abraham and the Jews. And so we get the word Semite, okay, or Shemite. Okay, that's where that word comes from. And then we have Ham, and he was spread along, but he was the furthest south. So you have Japheth, Shem, and Ham. And so down into Africa, that's Ham's people, really around the region of Canaan, or what we now call Israel, prior to Abraham's arrival, that was Ham's people, and all the way across. Nimrod is spoken of here in verse number, I may not have marked it. That was actually in chapter 10 of Ham's children. Cush begat, verse 8, begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. By the way, has anybody ever called you a Nimrod? You know, some people say, yeah. But that, you know, the reference is that you're not very smart. What's that? It's derogatory, isn't it? But here it wasn't a derogatory thing, but that's what we use it for, a derogatory term. In verse 28 of chapter 11, we see something happen here now. Let's go to verse 26. Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot, and Haran died before his father, Terah, in the land of his nativity, in Ur of the Chaldees. So we're in modern-day Iraq. This is, again, the family of Shem. And so we have Abram, renamed Abraham later. And we see that his brother died. And so what happened? His brother's son, Lot, became part of the family, became part of that nuclear family. Verse 29, Abram and Nahor took them wives. The name of Abram's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife, Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah, and the father of Iscah. But Sarai was barren, and she had no child. Verse 31, Terah took Abram, his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. They came to Haran and dwelt there. And see, this is another. This is one of those glimpses. This is a future thing. But he's telling it here. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So we see the ages are different. How old was Noah when he died? 950. And so here what? Abram's dad only lives 205 years. So we're starting to see the change because of the environmental changes after the flood. We're starting to see those years reduced. If you don't, you know, again, looking forward, how old was Abraham when he had his first child? 100 years old. How many of you want to have a child at 100? How many of you want to have one at 70, right? But those, you know, But we're seeing the ages, the changes of the environment. Everything's changing. Who did Nahor marry in verse 29? Milcah, the daughter of who? Haran, right? Who's Haran? His uncle, right? Am I wrong here? Did I say it right? Nahor. Yeah, it's his. He married his niece. Did I say it wrong? But you see, so people wonder about the families and how they. So we're seeing it. Who was Sarah to Abraham? His half sister. So Again, that's going to come up later. When did God say not to marry in your nuclear family? It was later. Hundreds of years later. So let's not get choked on that, because this is how the earth was repopulated. You had eight people. And from those eight people came everybody else. And so that means there had to be marrying of nieces and half-sisters and such as that. That was just part of it. Now here we are all these years later. We can't imagine doing that. But that was just the case back then. All right. Did I mix everybody up by asking who she was? But I just wanted to make the point that we, you know, people say, well, God had to make other people to go with. No, he didn't. And you could start that in Genesis chapter 1 and 3 and say, well, he had to make other people. Doesn't matter. They were all wiped out. We started over with eight people. And he started with those eight, and that was all there was. So all this discussion about giants and angels and all, it doesn't matter. All that was wiped out. We start over with eight people. Okay? Comments, questions, criticisms? I am my own cousin, by the way. For another time. If you don't know that story, I'll tell it. Let's take a break.